Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Learning Well. Today, we've got an informative show for you. Over the past 2 months, most of you know, our big focus on the strategy team has been this product we call the Learning Scorecard. And if you listen to our previous podcast, we detailed what the tool is and how it works. And I did that with Dr. Jerry Zanstra. So if you haven't seen any of our webinars or listened to that podcast, you might want to go back and do that now. But what we wanted to do today was kind of almost like a mailbag episode or frequently asked questions that we've heard about our scorecard. And when we do a webinar, you know, we're live, we're on a time limit. We wanted to give maybe a little more time to some of those questions that we've heard. So we gathered those. And I get the privilege of just peppering Jerry with questions today.
Yay for me.
We'll see if he knows what he's talking about. It's going to be fun.
That's really hard to tell sometimes.
No, I'm excited. But I guess for assuming maybe some of our listeners haven't listened to the first one, just give us just a tiny bit of background on the Learning Scorecard.
Sure. The Learning Scorecard is a software product that we have been developing over the last 3 years. It's both a process and it's software. And the idea is that you're able to do a 360 evaluation of your learning experiences in terms of what your learning team thinks, how learners react, what learners learn, how their behavior changes, and then finally ROI. It's very tempting to think of this as an ROI calculator only, and that's a mistake. What we have heard from many learning teams and what we have heard from conferences that we've been to is that many learning professionals are trying to understand the totality of their learning universe. And so we built that, we built the Learning Scorecard with that in mind. How do you, many of you, almost all of you have data at some level, some of you have mountains of data. How do you take all of that, integrate it in a way that is meaningful to you, determine what's meaningful to you, and then make it visual so that you can show it to your learning team, to operations, HR people, the CFO, the C-suite, so that you can understand the true impact of learning. So what we're trying to do is really a 360 evaluation of the true impact of learning across your organization.
And make it very visual in a dashboard and make it software. And I think, again, that's...
So it can integrate with all sorts of other systems, and so the visual component matters a great deal. If you don't have that, you're missing something significant, because somebody that doesn't do your job isn't going to get it quickly and simply, and you want your CFO to understand
Absolutely.
It simply
That's
and quickly.
Right.
Visual.
Well, you already answered my next question, which was what are the five levels of measurement that we're using in this model? If you were listening closely, you probably picked up on the fact that Jerry was really articulating Kirkpatrick. So a common question we get is, why did you pick Kirkpatrick? And then a follow-up to that is, why did we add that, we added a bottom level to Kirkpatrick. But why did we pick Kirkpatrick?
You like to pick things that aren't new, things that are well-established, things that are taught in virtually every instructional design program. Kirkpatrick has been around since the 50s. It is it's proven out. There are always people that, you know, would do something different.
Sure, improvements made or slightly different, or
But I think Kirkpatrick, looking at what is the learner reaction, what is the learner learning, what is the behavioral change, and what is the organizational impact, it's not just that it's, you know, close to 70 years old. It's also that it's logical.
It is. It really is that 360. It captures almost everything.
Yeah. So. And then we added a layer below. So most of you know Kirkpatrick always looks like a pyramid. We added a level at the bottom, which is we think there's a great deal of insight and wisdom to be had asking your own internal learning team, what do you think of the learning experiences that you created? And so... it's Kirkpatrick plus one.
Right. Well, and again, one of the interesting things is that as we look at these levels and most of the criticisms of Kirkpatrick usually come from just wrong implementation. And so, again, that's part of the reason we chose it and then tried to implement it in a way that answers those problems.
And another way to think of it, if you have a better evaluative system, we're all ears.
Absolutely,
but
we
are. This one is logical, it makes sense, and it's been used by thousands and thousands of people around the world.
Okay, so here's another question, because it's something you and I have discussed a lot, and other people on our team, you know, levels 1 through 3 seem fairly straightforward. I mean, you can go to any number of websites, organizations, books. There's even sort of boilerplate questions that you ask at those levels. Level 4 is really hard. Why is level level 4 harder to decide? What is it, the what to measure, or is it more the how, or both?
Yes, and probably 3 or 4 other things too. So when you get into level 4, you're really looking at behavioral change. And so if the behavior doesn't change, the learning experience was likely a waste of time and resource. Somehow learning needs to change behavior. That's what we all believe, that if you learn things and are able to do more things, that you're going to implement them, and those things are going to cause the kind of behavioral changes that you want to see.
Right.
It's difficult to measure behavior because it's not measured generically. You're looking at specific behaviors. And so if I'm looking at a preventative maintenance thing where I want to see my unscheduled downtime go down, versus I'm looking at onboarding where I want to see speed proficiency go up, or I'm looking at leadership development where I want to see a person progressing through leadership levels and being evaluated as a successful leader in the organization. All of those behaviors need to be, first of all, identified. Then they need to be taken apart.
Yeah.
Then you need to figure out where you're going to get that data from. Then you need to figure out how you're going to integrate it into the learning scorecard. And then you need to figure out which of those behaviors matter more or less to you. So there's a level of complexity at level 4. And honestly, every piece of, well, there's no really software. Every system that we've looked at has been primarily focused on 1, 2, and 3.
Right,
and then when you get
right.
to level 4, you're kind of guessing.
Right, because, I mean, level 1, oh, in our case, or level 2, about the user experience. I mean, I can ask, like, for boilerplate, would you be likely to recommend this to a friend?
Right.
Was it easy to navigate? Were you motivated? Did the level 3, did the scenarios fit your current work experience? Again, we're asking people to self-report. But if we have a big enough body of data pulling in, we're going to get sort of a standard number, which then I get to level 4, and now I have to, I think determining it is, first of all, difficult, but I think how to pull that. So if we take a typical manufacturing situation, some of it's hard numbers, but some of it was that skill performed correctly, and that has to be observed by someone else, and then a ranking given. And did that person have a bad day and spill coffee on their, you know, their clothes as they walked in the door, and they're just in a bad mood, or there's a lot of variables.
So that's the data source, and you're really trying to figure out how much of that is automated, how much of that is observational. There can even be portions of that that are self-reported. There's all sorts
absolutely.
Of ways to judge that behavioral piece. The more it's automated, of course, the more insight you're going to get, the more likely it's going to be accurate. But that's why it needs to be software. It needs to be software because it can integrate with HR systems and operations systems and financial systems. That level 4 is tricky, but if you don't get level 4, you don't really know if levels 1, 2, and 3 made any difference.
It doesn't,
and more importantly, you don't have any idea what the return on investment is, because you need to measure level 4. And that's why we have a team of PhDs that build models. They do this all over the world. And you need that model and that math done.
And that's why it's a bit of a, the software is built, but there's some semi-custom to this, to this, in that our team meets with you to help you determine what are your key metrics, how are you going to get that data, and also even getting alignment with all your stakeholders. Because so my next question is related to this, which is in the scorecard, you added weighting to the metrics, which is something that's kind of unique. Why did you do that, and how does that affect the overall ROI?
Because not everything weighs the same amount. Not everything matters the same. And so, and it doesn't even matter the same to different organizations who might be looking at
right.
the exact. One
right.
organization might care very much about data point 3, and they would rate that a 5 on a Likert scale. And another saying, yeah, we'll measure that, but it's a 2.
It yeah, we don't.
Really,
yeah.
If you're truly going to get a net score and a weighted score, then the weighting is important, and that takes place in a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And early on, I mean, when you're designing the learning, what behaviors are you trying to change? And which behaviors are more important to you than others? Mm-hmm. If those are clear in your head, it's a 5-minute conversation. If those
right.
are not clear,
which it never head, is because
right,
it's not.
You have competing
yes.
perspectives. It's really good to know that up front that 3 of us thought that we were going to change this behavior and measure it this way, and 7 of us thought this. That's the time to get alignment.
It is.
What are you actually trying to change? And then which of the things that you're trying to change are more important to you and which are less important?
Mm-hmm.
So the weighting is a big deal.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I was so excited about as I looked at our software, just the ability to weight things differently. Of course, you know, you can kind of fiddle with your results too, but I think it's important to be able to see that live.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how things rank in importance, we can change those numbers a little bit.
Very much.
So what's kind of in the back of my head, maybe just a little bit of a, not a devil's advocate, but what I alluded to earlier, how do we determine, because there are other factors, right? So how do we isolate the effects of learning? How do we know that behavior didn't change and it wasn't a learning issue? It was a whole different issue.
Sure.
So how do we figure out how we're going to do that?
Yeah. You're trying to establish, you know, causality,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's always a difficult thing to do in a complex world. If the world were simple, causality would be wonderful and just simple math. So the way we've seen organizations do it sometimes is they use a control group.
Mm-hmm.
So you take half the group, you don't introduce the learning to them, you take the other half of the group, you introduce learning to them. You can run a relatively short trial and you will know, depending on the topic.
Yeah, yeah.
But you will know within 4 to 6 weeks exactly how well this is working. You can even do it in a smaller, where you could do it in a trial group. You could take 20 people, run them through it, do some evaluative stuff, see how they change. Beyond that, there are other ways through observation
mm-hmm.
where you can look at the entire group. And you're going to run 1,000 people through this learning experience. You can see the trend lines of what was the current state prior to the learning experience and then what was the state post-learning experience, right? You don't have your control group. But
mm-hmm.
you can see
right.
that
can
you
see
I, this at this point you introduced this
mm-hmm.
thing, and then if you want to try it again, do some reinforcement 3 months later and see if you jump back up again.
Mm-hmm.
There are some less scientific ways to do it. You can ask people, did this make a difference, you know, to you, or some self-reporting.
Right.
The further away you get from the control group, the further the less reliable
right.
the data is.
Right.
But there's a good half a dozen or more ways of doing that. You can ask people, was this meaningful to you? Yes. Then you can look at their performance and then ask, did this introduction of this learning experience, we see that you got better.
Right, right.
Right? This happened right here, and then after that, you got better. Did that learning experience change your behavior? So there's lots of ways to do that. Can you rule out everything else? The plant got hit by a tornado, right?
And
production went wet. Well, you know some of those factors.
Yeah.
There are some factors that you might not know. And most of the insidious ones are buried in culture.
So. Yeah, I was just going to say.
Yeah. The hard ones are like
yeah.
everybody knows this. Nobody says it.
Yeah.
Those cultural ones are tough to ferret out sometimes. But there are ways to do that.
Yeah. To your point, I think we want more scientific as we can, but we also, I think even in the level of the learner reaction, if we mm-hmm. ask some good questions, even maybe some open-ended ones, which again, we're not putting those on the Likert scale, but we are gathering anecdotal data of, are there other factors that are impacting your ability to do your job and some of those kind of things.
That's one of the things I think the learning scorecard software does well.
Mm-hmm.
Is it actually allows you to put in some narratives.
Right,
It allows you to put in...
comments. And
yeah,
mm-hmm.
it allows you to put in qualitative data to see, okay, let's pick a sampling of and put that in and factor that in as you're considering the true impact of the learning experience.
That's why I'm so excited about it. I feel like it fits it's really the best of both worlds. We try to answer as much as possible the criticisms. Mm-hmm. I just have a couple more questions. This was a really good one that someone had asked us on a webinar, and so I want to repeat it. How do you divide up costs of learning, the learning team, staffing, equipment, software, against like your individual projects and figure that out for the purpose of the ROI, sure. Right?
Almost every organization understands its loaded cost, and most of what you're looking at, I mean, sometimes if you're doing XR, right, if you're doing virtual reality or augmented reality, you have a budget that mm-hmm. we created this and it's going to cost us X amount of dollars. That's relatively easy to do. But as far as people time, you're really just counting hours dedicated toward a particular project.
Right.
And so that's not that tough to do. Almost every organization of any size has a really good understanding of its average cost per person, with factoring in their laptop and insurance.
Right, any software.
Paid time off. Mm-hmm. Right, and all of those things. You have a raw cost for a person, and then you have the loaded cost for a person. And most organizations can come up with that fairly quickly. And then you have some software costs, mm-hmm. you know, LMS and your, you know, authoring tool or whatever cool thing you're using to do that with. Those usually aren't huge costs. It can be significant, but you can measure those. Mm-hmm. But some of those are also sunk. Well, we're getting economic nerdy here.
No.
But some of those yep. are sunk costs. You're going to pay the LMS fee no matter what.
Yeah.
So it you know, and the authoring tool, you're paying a license probably multi-year. So I think you're really looking at learning-specific technology, software, but primarily people hours.
Yeah, and I wanted to include that question, though, just in case somebody wasn't thinking mm-hmm. of those things. Like there's all the cost of mm-hmm. development, but you have to think, you know, all the other things involved. So I thought that was a good question, just yep. even to force us to have a little perspective. So I guess I have one other question two really, and this I think is interesting. Most of our listeners are corporate. Mm-hmm. But we have had a couple of people ask, for example, what are our thoughts on implementing something like this in higher ed? And while I give you a little time to think about that, I think one of the interesting things in higher ed is that there is especially in adult learning, there's a bit of an evolution, and we hope things are moving where we're training towards competency. And what mm-hmm. do we want that person to look like when they graduate? What skills and competencies do we want them to have? But in the undergraduate world, we're not even close to mm-hmm. that for a variety of reasons. There's value in education mm-hmm. beyond just what skills sure. I can perform.
Right. And that's John Adams, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Sure.
So, but I'm curious, in terms of applying a learning scorecard to a corporate-like course or series of courses. Higher ed.
Corporate is easier to do because you introduce the learning experience and then the people remain with you. Mm-hmm. And you're able to observe them. And you're able to look at their behavior and measure their behavior. The challenge in higher ed is really you could ask people making curriculum in higher ed what they think, which would be our level one. Mm-hmm. You could ask the students what they think.
And they do. That's definitely a huge part of it.
Right. And then you can judge what they learn mm-hmm. and how they performed on quizzes and speeches and presentations and exams and all the rest of those things, or demonstrations, right. labs. And then your relationship with them ends.
Yes,
because they really don't want mm-hmm. your alma mater calling you up and saying, you know, are you handling your personal finances better than you were 6 months ago?
Right.
That's kind of where the data cuts off. And so there are very sophisticated pieces of software that could judge level 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. And the scorecard could apply mm-hmm. to that. Mm-hmm. But it's truly that behavioral change over some period of time, you know, beyond a 12-week semester or mm-hmm. 13-week semester, where once the professor or instructor, they leave my classroom or your classroom, mm-hmm. we've both taught it in higher ed. I mean, you stay in contact with some of them, but that's where the break comes. Mm-hmm. You're not able to observe their behavior. So this really isn't built for higher ed. We've seen some cool, you and I have seen some yeah. really cool higher ed stuff.
Yeah.
But it all breaks down once you get to judging behavioral changes.
Right. And that's where I think probably at best its application might be, you know, decent if you're in sort of that adult graduate school type mm-hmm. program where people are looking to, you know, you have adult learners, they're looking to apply their learning to specific skill sets or demonstrating through presentations. But it was an interesting question we had gotten from someone. And I thought, yeah, I mean, we definitely want to address it and kind of where the, for higher ed, where that break is.
And I think universities do that through surveys with graduates,
for sure.
Where they're looking at what kind of job do you have, what salary range do you have. But you're looking at tangential things. You're not really looking at behavioral changes.
Right. Well, as we wrap this up, one of the big questions always is, you have this learning scorecard, okay, we figure out metrics, we consult with you all. What does reporting look like? Are there multi-level reports? Mm-hmm. Are they, because we have different stakeholders, like we talked about, right? Yeah, different data, like what does that look like?
Yeah, that's why I thought it was essential to have a dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is, again, a 360 evaluative tool to multiple audiences. And the things your learning team care about are going to be different than what your HR team thinks about and cares about versus operations, versus onboarding, and versus the CFO, and versus the entire C-suite. So we're compiling all of the data. The data is the same. The insights are what are different.
Right.
And that's and those insights need to be visual, partly because that's your competition, right? Everybody in your organization has dashboards. Look at your sales team. Look at the dashboards they have. Look at operations. They have very sophisticated. HR has very sophisticated dashboards. You need a dashboard that will compete with that, that's appropriate to that particular level. And so the idea is that there are multiple dashboards for things that are germane to a particular audience.
Right, and I think, you know, in the typical sort of world, the LMS gives me a dashboard or some kind of report so I know how many, or at level three, our level three, how many people participated and what their overall scores were. But if I'm the manager of the L&D team, I want the self-reported from my learning team. What did they think about it? And I've seen those screens. I love them. You know, I can see the aggregate score, 4.2. They felt like we met the objectives. Well, okay, that's pretty important and that's pretty high. And then I think if I am an operations manager, boy, I am looking, I want my own screen, level four. What behavior changed? When did it change? We have these wonderful graphs and charts that show. Because that's the other thing. Learning isn't designed. You don't just release it once. Mm-hmm. And so we ran an example where we tracked three. You know, and I released it at this point. Did I meet my target? Yeah, my target went up. Then it started to decline after a couple months.
Yeah, about 3 months in.
Right. So I did a nudge. I reintroduced some things, and it went back up again. And then if I'm the CFO, I want to see the ROI screen and that particular report and dashboard.
Right. So that's defending the spend.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I thank you so much, Jerry, for your time, for answering some of these questions in a little more detail. For those of you that are listening, we're always happy to engage questions. We have a lot of information out there on our website. We'll put a QR code if you're interested in watching a demo of the software in the show notes and also as we release this on social media. So we thank you for listening today. We thank you for your interest in measuring ROI, right? It's really important. And your time is a gift, and we appreciate you spending it with us.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.